This podcast episode is brought to you by Paleo Valley's Organic Extra Virgin Olive Oil. Now, we all know that many olive oils are cut with seed oils or that they are rancid, and so it's not always easiest to find a quality and properly sourced olive oil. Yes, in case you didn't know, many store-bought olive oils are diluted or blended, compromising both taste and quality, and may even cause rancidity. I'm really glad that Paleo Valley's extra virgin olive oil remains pure and unadulterated, sourced from a single organic valley in Greece. Paleo Valley ensures freshness and nutrient content by packaging their olive oil in dark glass bottles. At a certain point, I stopped using extra virgin olive oil, but once our practice started working with people with chronic inflammatory response syndrome, or SIRS, we started recommending it for the reduction of TGF-beta-1. It is an immune system marker that shows inflammation both for COVID-19, SIRS, and actually many other illnesses. So if your TGF-beta-1 is high, you may want to try incorporating a little bit of extra virgin olive oil. Make sure to check it out. It comes in a 2-pack package. And remember, all Paleo Valley products are guaranteed with a money-back guarantee. Go to paleovalley.com/NWJ to get 15% off your order. Thanks for supporting companies that support this podcast. I had the pleasure of sitting down with Beth O'Hara, who is the founder of Mast Cell 360. If you suffer from histamines or MCAS, mast cell activation syndrome, or basically if you're eating meat or you're eating certain foods and you have an immune response, maybe you get hives, maybe you get itchy, maybe you have low energy after, maybe you're just not feeling well. Or maybe you are constantly constipated and you just don't have a lot of energy, whether it's exposed to a VOC or a chemical or a moldy home, you will likely want to watch this interview. Hey guys, my name is Judy Cho and I'm board certified in holistic nutrition. And I have a private practice where we focus on root cause healing. And that often starts with the Carnivore Cures All Meat Elimination Diet. Today, I had the pleasure of sitting down with Beth O'Hara. She is all things MCAS and histamines and really helping people find root cause healing. She shares her incredible healing story and how she ended up finding information on MCAS and histamines and what all of those differences are and where you will find them in the body. She talks about the specifics of, is it histamines or is it MCAS, where you'll find it, what it looks like, what are symptomologies, what you can do for it, what are some steps to start taking to reducing MCAS, and if MCAS is even a root cause issue, and if it's not a root cause, what are some of the most prevalent root cause issues? I recommend watching this whole interview, especially if you're kind of stuck in carnivore and you don't want to be just all meat. I'm not saying that all meat isn't a powerful diet. It absolutely is. But for many of us, we want to possibly introduce other foods over time. Maybe we go to London and we want to eat fish and chips. Not saying French fries are ideal, especially if they're cooked in seed oils, but just saying that if you want to have the option of eating other foods, that we then should be able to. But when we can't tolerate, because then we get bedridden or we start feeling a lot of fatigue or we have mental health imbalances from eating or being exposed to certain dietary things, that is not ideal and not root cause healing. And Beth even talks about why it's not ideal to never address root cause, because ultimately you will start feeling sick over time as these mast cells and the histamines and our immune responses are basically notifying the body that something is imbalanced. And the more that you don't take care of that root cause, eventually it will become bigger and bigger. And the band-aids that we use today may not work tomorrow. Beth also has a website of all the information on histamines and MCAS, dietary supplements that may be able to support you through your healing journey. And she also has a mind-body program because she understands the importance of how the nervous system, the vagal nerve, is all interrelated to healing or supporting your MCAS issues. We also have just opened up a mind-body, but it just shows that all of us that were never focused on mind-body initially has found that that is such a big component in healing. So make sure to check out Beth O'Hara's mind-body program as well. I'll put it in the show notes. I think she was too kind and did not mention it because she knew that I had my own mind body. But I think there's enough people that are unwell. We just want people to heal. And so I think it's important to share when there are multiple resources. Not everyone fits for every single person. So if you find the benefit in Beth's mind body support, I definitely recommend you check it out. This conversation is so powerful. It's so helpful. It's so important for the carnivore discussion. Let's get right into this interview. Hi, Beth. It's so nice to have you on my channel. I would say that my clients and our carnivore community or our meat-based low-carb community, they're such fans of your work, Mast Cell 360, that website. And or many people have said to me also that you are their favorite MCAS/histamine person. So I just wanted to, you know, give you kudos for all the work that you are doing because it is acknowledged and recognized. But that all said, for the people that do not know you, if you can introduce yourself.
Well, first, thank you so much. And it's just a pleasure and a delight to be with you and get to talk with you too, because we've got such similar mindsets and really working with some of the sickest people who were so challenged. Well, the way I got into this, for people who haven't heard my story, I had mystery symptoms from a young age and just quite significant between hives and itching and rashes, insomnia, even anxiety as a young person. And there were good reasons for that. We grew up in an old farmhouse. Nobody knew anything about mold back then. And we were in the country. We got bit by ticks all the time. And then I had a head injury when I was 9. And so all of that kind of came together to create this mast cell picture. But of course, nobody was talking about mast cells. And the only thing that was really known back then was that rare condition called mastocytosis. But I was diagnosed with allergies. I was put on allergy meds and they helped with symptoms for a while, but I wasn't addressing those underlying root issues. And so when I got into college, I was probably in another moldy place because I was renting a duplex next to the campus so I could walk to classes. And my health crashed quite a bit at that point in time to where I had been on route to go to medical school and I had full scholarships. And I had to turn them down because I was struggling just to get out of bed, just extreme fatigue, flushing, things like that. No idea what was going on. And that turned into a numerous year journey. And it continued to devolve to where I could barely walk. I was having to use a cane. It felt like ground glass in my joints, just excruciating joint pain. And I was told I would be in a wheelchair by the time I was in my mid-30s. Fortunately, I was using little carts at the grocery and all of that, you know, as a young person. Fortunately, that didn't come to be. And I think one of the reasons was I decided I wasn't going to identify with that diagnosis. I was told I had a rare form of rheumatoid arthritis, but I didn't have any markers. So it didn't make sense. Then I started learning about histamine intolerance. I started learning about oxalates. And then I started learning about mast cell activation syndrome. Went, oh my gosh, this describes my whole life. And started chipping away at the pieces. It took quite a while because there wasn't anything consolidated out there about what to do about it. But as the layers peeled back, one of the biggest pieces was learning about mold toxicity, which I know you talk about a lot too, and getting out of mold exposures. But I had so much mold colonized in my body that was producing mold in itself. It was like I was a mycotoxin factory. And working through those things is what helped me regain my health. And I still have health maintenance I have to do. So I don't want to give people false hope like, oh, well, we might get back to eating Pizza Hut and Taco Bell and all that stuff, which is what I was doing in college. But there's so much we can do to really regain our health, particularly if we can work on these root causes.
Well, thank you. I didn't know your full story, and that's really powerful. I'll probably dig into some of the specifics of like your mold and just your history, but I wanted to go to the basics because I'm sure we throw around the words of histamines and MCAS. And I know you're such an expert in this area, especially because it hits home for you, but can you just give us a basic understanding of what's histamines, what's MCAS? Are there different receptors? Where are they located in the body? Does it release? If you can just give us the lay of the land.
Yeah, I'd love to. And I want to tell people who are tuning in that if you have any kind of chronic condition, if you've had mold toxicity, tick-borne infections, autoimmunity, or just mystery symptoms people have had a hard time figuring out, that you really want to stay tuned for this because We think this is probably, when I talk to my colleagues in this area, we all agree people with chronic illness is maybe affecting more than 75%. We know the population studies were between 9 and 17% before the pandemic. Mm-hmm. And studies have come out showing that the COVID and these viruses can be major triggers. So I just want to put that on people on radar before we go into some of this physiology.
Okay.
So our mast cells are, well, I think of them as like frontline defender and sensor cells of the immune system. And what they're sensing for, we could boil down to, am I safe? And then what are we sensing? Are we safe from? Are we safe from toxins? Are we safe from pathogens? And are we safe from chronic stressors? And this is where the nervous system piece, the trauma piece comes in. So I'll come back to that a little bit. And these mast cells are covered in receptors. They have over 200 different receptor types, which is quite amazing. That's quite complex for a cell. And these receptors, there's all kinds of different ones, sensing for viruses and bacteria. They sense for fungal species. They sense for toxins. They're sensing for even things inside our bodies as well. So everything external, everything internal. They're looking for hormones, neurotransmitters. And then inside, they have over 1,000 different mediators. And that's amazing, just that many. Now, all mast cells are not exactly the same. So you can have mast cells in some tissue that have higher concentrations, where they're higher concentrations of, say, the neurotransmitter receptors. And others areas are going to have higher concentrations of hormone receptors. These mast cells are through our entire bodies, and they're in every tissue except the retina. And so they're in the skin, they're around the eyes, all the tissue around the eyes, they're in the sinus cavities, the whole GI tract. So from the mouth all the way down through the intestines, they're in our lungs and our heart tissue, they're in our cardiovascular, our veins and our arteries, and they're in all of the organs. And they're made in the bone marrow and they migrate out. So the reason it's important to know where they exist is that is going to dictate what kind of symptoms people have in combination with which receptors are getting overactivated or over-triggered and which mediators are getting released. And one of the other things to know about the location is that they line all of the nerves and the nerve endings, and they're even in the brain, and they're even in areas like the limbic system. And so they have a constant cross communication with our nervous system. So all of that to say, our mast cells are responding to every molecule of air, every particle of food or drink we put in our mouths, supplements, medications, whatever it is. They're sensing also down to our very thoughts and our emotions. So that's why nervous system is so important when we're dealing with these kinds of chronic conditions. And then the mast cells are communicating with the rest of the body. They are one of the major orchestrators of the rest of the immune response. And that's why if somebody has autoimmunity or even a cancer history, it's really important to look at what's going on with the mast cell dysregulation, because they're a big communication aspect of how the immune system is functioning. One of the most well-known of the chemicals called mediators that mast cells release is histamine. And so many people talk about that, and they've heard of antihistamines. But then there's a lot more that they can release. Cytokines are signaling molecules, and so that's kind of become a household word. There's prostaglandins and interleukins and all these different types of molecules. But the histamine can be released by mast cells into other cells, basophils and eosinophils. And then that histamine can cause some similar symptoms to mast cell activation. That's where it can get confusing, whether it's a histamine, just pure histamine issues or mast cell issues. So we can talk about that here in a second. But I know people are going to want to know, what are the symptoms? And so that's where I went into why we went into location. We went into these different chemical mediators that are being released and these different receptors, because it depends. And so if somebody has overactive mast cells in the skin, then they might have flushing, hives, itching. They might have things like psoriasis, eczema. If somebody has mast cell issues in the GI tract, that's where they could get, if it's up in the mouth, mouth burning, or they could have trouble with reflux, and that can be stimulated by too much histamine release. We can have GI issues with inflammation in the GI tract, diarrhea, constipation. In the bladder, we have bladder burning, we have urgency. People can have left upper quadrant pain is not uncommon, and the spleen can get inflamed sometimes. That's really involved in the immune system. People can have muscle pain. They can have symptoms with the nervous system that are mast cell related, and these can show up as anxiety. They can show up as depression, can show up as sleep issues. So most people don't have all of the various symptoms, and there's too many. We could spend the whole time just doing these symptoms. But what it boils down to is there'll be symptoms in two or more systems of the body. So for example, I have somebody that I've been working with that gets a lot of anxiety issues. She has trouble sleeping, and then she also has GI symptoms. So she's having trouble with alternating constipation and diarrhea. Now people are thinking, well, isn't that SIBO? So SIBO can be a cause of mast cell inflammation. And then somebody else that I've worked with has had a lot of issues with psoriasis. They've had issues with hives at times, particularly getting exposed to triggers like mold, and has issues with things like asthma, trouble breathing. So there's so many presentations that this can show up, that the way it's often looked at is if there's inflammation in two or more systems, and the symptoms are waxing and waning, so they're flaring and calming back down again, it might be worth looking at. And we've got a symptom survey on our website if people want to take a closer look at the symptoms that have really been correlated with mast cell issues.
And then in terms of symptoms with histamine, so I know that they're so similar, but is there a way, or does it even matter that I'm suffering from histamines or I'm actually suffering from mast cell activation? Does it even matter if there's a difference?
I think that's a great question. It does matter because it changes the approach.
Okay.
But figuring it out is not simple. So typically, now most of the people I've seen have both issues with histamine intolerance and mast cell activation. Some people just have histamine intolerance. And so if they do, if we have histamine intolerance, we can be either over-consuming histamine and it's building up in the body faster than we can break it down. We have trouble with the pathways that break it down, like diamine oxalase and oxidase and methylation, or we can be overproducing it from the mast cells. Now, if we're overproducing it, we probably have mast cell issues as well. Typically, if somebody just has histamine intolerance, the symptoms are easier to manage. They may improve with using like Pepcid, which is actually, people think about it as an acid reducer, but it's actually an H2 histamine 2 receptor blocker, which is in the GI tract in high levels. So sometimes that'll calm symptoms down for people, or an antihistamine may, or using things like diamine oxidase, the DAO supplement may calm it down. And doing a low histamine diet can typically just settle things down quite a bit for people. If they have both mast cell activation and histamine intolerance, then they may have issues with breaking it down and overproducing it. So at that point, it requires more of a consolidated approach. Then typically the way people will find out is they do a low histamine diet, and they may do that for about 4 to 6 weeks, see what happens with symptoms, and often combine that with something like diamine oxidase, which breaks down histamine. It's made in the small intestines. But if there's any kind of gut inflammation, which I know your listeners have a lot of, it's hard for our bodies to make that DAO. And so a lot of times if it's just histamine tolerance, it's going to start clearing up. People usually don't have a ton of issues with supplements. They're usually not having a lot of chemical sensitivities or those things that we might see with mast cell activation. But if we see a reduction in symptoms, but we still have a lot of symptoms, then we may have a combination.
Okay.
Now, there's a few people with mast cell activation that don't have histamine intolerance, so they may do that diet and really see no improvements at all. I don't see that very often in the people I work with, but that does happen.
Yeah, that's interesting. I see a mix of both in our practice too. So we'll have some people that have every symptom that you could think of in when someone has illness or chronic illness. But they're not as sensitive with supplements. So they can take 5 new ones and they're fine. And then there's some people that don't have as many symptoms, but they're super sensitive to everything. And then even one or half a capsule of something new will make them really sick. So it's interesting to know that it could be that it's just maybe histamines or histamines plus MCAS. But if I'm hearing you correctly, so like say for the carnivore diet, for the most part, there's less histamines. I know if we eat just ground beef or leftovers, that can trigger a higher histamine response. But assuming we don't eat that, we don't eat the fish. So it's a lower histamine carnivore diet. And then we try to take the DAO, but we're not really getting an abundance of relief of symptoms. Can I just then consider maybe this is more MCAS than just histamine playing alone?
It would definitely be worth that, taking a look at and looking at the whole symptom picture for sure.
And then taking the test on your site. And I'll put that in the show notes as well. Are there, other than your questionnaire, other than trying like the common supplements, the antihistamines, is there a specific test that we can take for either histamines or for MCAS? Hey guys, I'm excited to share that I'll be speaking at Hack Your Health by KetoCon May 31st through June 2nd. You can come by and say hi while I do a book signing or join me during the food addiction panel or the triumphs in troubleshooting on a carnivore diet panel on the main stage. Hack Your Health by KetoCon is the largest event in the US focused solely on the science and stories of tools to improve your health journey. As part of the conference, there are over 200 vendors and 70 speakers that include medical professionals, practitioners, coaches, and experts. I love this event because it's the largest community gathering of like-minded people. I guarantee you, you'll make at least one friend. Make sure to get your 3-day pass and use code NWJ50 to get $50 off your 3-day general admission pass. Go to hackyourhealth.com and get tickets today. It's an incredible experience you don't want to miss. And if you're at the conference, make sure to come by and say hello. Remember, use code NWJ50 to get $50 off your tickets.
So there is testing out there. On the histamine side, there's blood testing, and then there's a urine test called N-methyl urinary histamine. And that those tests are a little challenging. And then there's some other tests for some of the other mediators. For example, tryptase can be measured, prostaglandin D2 can be measured. There's a lot of debate about using these tests. Now, in traditional medicine, that's what the mindset is on, is we have to have testing data. And so the official diagnostic criteria says that you have to have an elevation in one of the blood markers or urinary markers that are being tested. The challenge is that these have to be processed in a cold centrifuge, and very few labs have that. Quest and LabCorp don't have those. The other problem is that the mediators can be up and down pretty quickly. And one of the questions I always have is, okay, if there's over 1,000 mediators and we can test for about a dozen, how do we know we're getting the ones that are affecting somebody?
Right.
And so I think this testing may be missing a lot of people. And what's happening is people are often being told, well, you can't have MCAS because you don't have an elevation. And then there's another school of thought, and this is because this is all newer. In terms of this diagnostic criteria, which just came out in 2016, there's always going to be debate. So it's a lot newer than, say, Alzheimer's or type 2 diabetes criteria. But again, how do we know that it's catching people? And this other school of thought is that only tryptase will be elevated. And that kind of comes from, in some of these rare conditions like mastocytosis, which is a genetic mast cell issue, tryptase will be elevated in that typically. So all that to boil down to, a lot of this is coming down to grassroots efforts of people educating themselves. I don't want people going totally solo because it's really important to have medical care and have other things ruled out because there are other things that can mimic MCAS. But when people have been from doctor to doctor, like you see, like I see, a lot of times just supporting the body in the same ways are going to give people results. And I think that's what we're ultimately after, is helping people improve their health.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense, especially when you're saying not to go by this alone, because even from my research and what you alluded to earlier, oftentimes if MCAS is being expressed or histamines are being expressed, it's an immune response in a sense or a communication tool. So oftentimes it's not the root cause issue. Do you see that too? And then if it's not the root cause issue, what are some root causes that may trigger an MCAS release or an MCAS illness or excess histamines?
I think that's the most important question, because there are people who think, oh, well, this is just genetic. This is just, I just have MCAS. I'm going to have to live with it the rest of my life. But the more that we study about mast cells, we realize, well, they get dysregulated for most people for a reason. Now, there are some rare genetic forms of mast cell activation syndrome. So even what we're talking about would improve that. But most of the people that we're talking about here are dealing with it being triggered by something. And the most common triggers are mold toxins, tick-borne infections, and trauma and chronic stress. So a lot of times I'll see people who it turned on after a surgery that was really hard, or I was talking with somebody who had a surgery and was under anesthetized and was in a lot of pain for a long period of time, and things really flared up after that. And sometimes people have had it since childhood, like I did. And the mold toxins are one of the biggest ones to take a look at. It's become so prevalent. And they're just really huge disruptors to the immune system, but every system in our bodies, they disrupt the liver, they can disrupt the GI tract, they can disrupt the kidney if they go on for a long period of time, the nervous system, it's just system-wide. And then the tick-borne infections. So mast cells are really primed to protect us from these things. And I think that they've just kind of hit these epidemic levels. And then we have COVID virus as well, which has been triggering. So we've got this whole new layer, and we've got this whole new group of people who are starting to learn about MCAS because they're realizing they're having these symptoms again throughout their bodies that are inflammatory, they're waxing, waning, and it's being triggered by something.
Do you think that long COVID can actually just be undiagnosed MCAS or some of the immune system was handling some level of mold or some level of tick-borne illness that had gone dormant? And now with COVID and the immune system just getting weakened, maybe with excess release of cytokines. And so all of this then long COVID isn't necessarily long COVID, but that now MCAS is, you know, up and center, or that their tick-borne illness that was dormant is now more reactivated, or the mold sensitivities is becoming worse.
So there's so much debate on this, right? And it's a bit controversial. So I'm just going to have just wonder, you know, I do wonder how much is dysregulated immune functioning and dysregulated nervous system functioning. There were some reports that the COVID virus was disrupting the immune signaling. I've seen a lot of people improve with supporting mast cells and their nervous system. Now, I know there are people that are dealing with all kinds of levels of complications that have to do with coagulation and things like that. But it does seem to help when people support the mast cells and support the nervous system.
Okay. If I was your client and I said, I've had a tick-borne infection at one point, I've lived in moldy buildings, I definitely have MCAS-related symptoms, I also struggle with long COVID. I mean, where should I start? Because it's so overwhelming. You know, do I start with the gut? Do I start with mind-body? Where would you start a person?
Well, the people that I typically see are sensitive. And now there's certainly people out there that can start with gut, they can start with hormones, and they can just barrel through protocol. So I think about three levels of sensitivity. There's people who are robust, they can take whatever they need to take. There are people who are sensitive and they're having trouble onboarding things, but they can get some supplements on board. And then there are people that are really hypersensitive and they're struggling to take anything. So in all of those three categories, I always recommend that people start with the nervous system and supporting it, mind, body, like you're talking about, but particularly working with the limbic system, working with the vagal nerve system, and then also looking at structural issues. So a lot of times people may have issues with their upper neck, which can put pressure on the vagal nerve. And so sometimes they may have to have the neck worked with somebody does osteopathic work, or they may be able to do some work themselves on it, depending on how significant it is. And then we shift into working with mast cell support. So this is part of the method I developed called the MC360 method. And we want to calm everything down, particularly if somebody's having sensitivities or trouble tolerating things. Can we just calm down this hypervigilance? And the hypervigilance is within the nervous system mast cell axis. So that's why I emphasized how much the mast cells are surrounding the entire nervous system and even in the brain. And in the brain inflammation, they migrate in even higher numbers across the blood-brain barrier. So if people can do those things first, then that often, for particularly if their sensitivities, opens the door to move to what's next. And then there's a lot of times a kind of a back and forth approach, right? So you get things dialed down. You're not going to be symptom free, but can you get things dialed down about 10, 20% where you can tolerate things? And then digestion is so critical. The gut is so critical. There's a huge amount of mast cells in the gut. So a lot of times when we're doing the mast cell supports, we're working on calming the gut and seeing if we can help with, particularly if there's constipation, so that we can get some elimination of toxins and they're not sitting in there. From that standpoint, you have to look at what people's biggest symptoms are, try to give them a little bit of relief, but then we'll typically move into, if somebody had everything that you're talking about, then we would start moving into working with the mold toxins. And can we take some load off of there? And that's a big one people ask is, well, what about the tick-borne infections, or what about the SIBO or parasites or so on? And if somebody has an acute tick-borne infection, absolutely, they need to be working with a tick-borne specialist, a Lyme specialist, or whatever kind of infections they have. But if it's been dormant for a long time, or maybe not dormant, but it's been chronic for a long time, reducing mold toxins can really make a difference in helping the immune system re-regulate so that at some point then it can turn its attention to those layers. And the immune system has to work in conjunction with those protocols. So that's the approach that we found generally works really well for people. Now, I always want to say we do consulting, so we're not prescribing, we're not diagnosing, and we're really supporting people through these journeys and working with their team. But if you can get the mold layer down, then it just doorways start to open up for people. But a lot of times they can't go straight into that detox. We have to prepare the body for that. And the reason for that is if you start pulling toxins out of the tissues with binders and all these liver supports and so on, then it's going to agitate those mast cells even more. You're going to get more mast cell flaring. And most people are kind of at the top of what they can handle with flaring. So that's the reasoning for bringing this flaring down a little bit more. I've worked with people who had tried glutathione IVs, they had tried ozone treatments, they had been doing IV antibiotics, and they just weren't getting anywhere, and they'd done them for years. For some people, it's worked great, which I'm very happy about, but that's not who you and I get. And so we kind of have to look at a different way to navigate through.
Yeah, a lot of what you said makes sense. So, I mean, I was telling you offline just a little bit, but we were doing the gut first with an elimination diet. And when we started with that first, and then we learned of mold and SIRS, then we had our people that already worked on like the drainage, the gut, basically reducing that toxin bucket load that would maybe stir some of the MCAS. And then when they went to then do mold, and I didn't think about the steps that they had done this initial step, but they were able to tolerate some of the heavier, the hard-hitting binders better. And then we just then opened it up more publicly to share, actually, if you're not getting better on carnivore, you may want to pursue mold or pursue these environmental toxins. And so many of these people never did real gut supports and then moved on. And then what we found was that they weren't tolerating these heavier binders. And so then they got stuck. And it's just, how do we help these people? And so I think what you said makes so much sense. And then even for some of the clients that we had that did do the gut, did do the binders, they're not fully healing even through all of these protocols. And we find the correlation is that a lot of these people have severe trauma from their childhood. Maybe their nervous system is dysregulated. And so I wanted to ask you, it kind of makes sense how you're doing that first. How do you support the nervous system, the vagal? It sounds like you maybe use some osteopathy or some chiropractic care, but is there other things that, you know, you recommend for that first step?
Yeah. So a limbic program is very helpful for people. I think about, again, these three areas. So some people may not know what the limbic system is. Okay. Yeah. So the limbic system is the part of the brain that is involved in fear, emotion, and pattern tracking. And so it's looking for that didn't go well, and so I better avoid that. And it really evolved for us because if we were eating a mushroom that made us sick, we wanted to know, don't eat that mushroom again. Or, you know, last time you went down that path, there was a bear, so there might be a den. Let's not go that way. But it can misrecognize and create patterns that aren't actually what happened. And so what can happen, particularly in trauma, is that we can carry that trauma with us constantly. And so it's like we're still back in it in some way. It can also happen just with reactions to supplements and things like that. So, for example, I had food poisoning that I know I got from an Italian restaurant, but by the time the symptoms hit me, I was in India and I was smelling Indian food all the time. And so my limbic system associated it with that. So limbic retraining is about shifting the limbic system from a place of fear into a place of safety and calm. And there's lots of programs for that. There's DNRS, there's Gupta program, there's Primal Trust. The key is to pick one and to really work it for a good 6 months to a year, but maybe not a whole hour. So a lot of them say, you know, you got to do an hour. And for some people that are sensitive, that's too much. So really listening to bodies. And then we've got all kinds of vagal nerve approaches. And the reason that that is critical is vagal nerve, for people who aren't familiar, comes out the top of the neck and innervates parts of the face and then down every organ. So the breathing, the diaphragm, it's a muscle, but the heart, the intestines, it can be really involved in stubborn chronic constipation. And then there's so many vagal modalities, and this is where there's not a one size fits all approach. And I've had people who couldn't even listen to classical music. And so some of the sound programs, we really like NuCalm. Some people use BrainTap. They're safe and sound protocol, which is wonderful, but that's not a good starting point for somebody who's really sensitive. You got to build up to that. But if you've got the sound sensitivities, which is really common in mold toxins and Bartonella, may not be able to do those. So it may mean doing some things like there's vagal release exercises that help release the muscles around the back of the neck. There's people who do cranial work and osteopathy, and biodynamic method can be really helpful for releasing that vagal nerve. There's humming and toning And so typically people do better if they have kind of a synergy of approaches, but they've got to try some things and see what works, but at the same time, stick with it for a while. And so that's typically where we're starting there. So limbic, vagal, and then if anybody's had head injuries, getting their neck looked at. If there's migraines, then using a functional neurologist. Or sometimes there's like functional eye exercises, or there's even functional optometrists that can help if the eyes aren't tracking correctly. So there's a lot that can be looked at in terms of the nervous system. But a great starting point, if somebody's just starting out, is to pick a limbic program and to do some vagal work.
And then do you decide when they move to the next step? Is it that they have a reduction of symptoms? So maybe if they were sensitive to sounds, they're not as much, and then you think that they're ready?
Right. You start to see some reduction typically in sensitivities. You start to see some reduction just in flaring, because the nervous system is sending signals of safety to the mast cells. mast cells are sending signals of safety back to the nervous system. So that's that crosstalk. And so just by entering through the nervous system, you can get some reduction in mast cell flaring as well. You may see GI symptoms start to calm down a little bit, particularly because there's such a huge amount of the nervous system and the immune system in the GI tract.
Okay. And then we have clients that, because they've been on this really long chronic illness journey, they do their own research. And so they become their experts in their own rabbit holes they go through. And so some of my clients have gone down the methylation, molybdenum deficiency, sulfur intolerance. And so when they do things that counteract these possible rabbit holes, they say they feel better. But I just wonder, is a lot of that really mast cell related?
I can totally relate, because this is exactly what I did too. I started out trying to hone all my biochemistry, looking at all the genetic pathways and really in depth, and got pretty in the weeds. And some things would really help, like molybdenum to help the sulfur processing pathway. Now, there's a mistake that I made, which was I noticed that I felt worse when I had certain sulfur foods. I didn't understand about FODMAPs. And I see this a lot, this confusion. I made it myself. If I'm getting some bloating and issues like that after sulfur foods, maybe it's that sulfur pathway and I should take those foods out. The challenge with that, well, one, it's probably a GI bacteria disruption if that's what's going on. And there are some people that have significant issues with that pathway, but I found it's not quite as common to where people need to take the sulfur foods out. The problem with that is we need sulfur for detoxification, and we need mast cells use sulfates to stabilize themselves. And the other thing I see is that there's a lot written online about sulfites. And so sulfites can be preservatives in foods, and those can build up pretty quickly on people. But if that pathway we're talking about, that CBS enzyme's not working, we could get stuck at those sulfites. So that's where molybdenum can help. And then methylation is really important because it's part of detox, but it also produces SAMe that's needed as a cofactor for one of the other big enzymes that breaks down histamine called HNMT. Now, we have so many people who can't tolerate methylation supports. So this is where it helps to really zoom out and go, okay, what is going on? And what we know is that mold toxins tend to disrupt these pathways. And the other important piece we can bring to the table is this, it's called cell danger response. It was brought forward by Robert Navio a few years ago. And this was a huge light bulb moment for me, in that what's happening in our bodies, it's so easy to see our bodies as our enemy, or as this mast cells being as our enemy, and we just got to knock that out. But that's not really what's happening. The mast cells are actually protecting us. And cell danger response talks about, I'm going to really, really super simplify this, but it talks about these pathways in our bodies that get shifted to protect us when we're dealing with toxins, pathogens, chronic stressors. So one of the things that happens is methylation can get turned down and affect in that way. Some people it can get turned up, but a lot of times it gets turned down. So then when people take methylation supports, we're going against where the body is trying to go to protect us. And it's protecting us by shifting our biochemistry to help us fight off these things, or to help us not clear toxins too quickly in a way that's going to create damage. So I want to bring people's attention back to the kind of the big picture of why this is happening. And so sometimes people are having reactions to supplements because it's a nervous system or mast cell sensitivity, kind of oversensitivity that's going on. Sometimes we're bringing in things at the wrong timing. And so it's not that we can't use methylation supports. It's just that, oh, your body may not be ready. It may not be in that phase. And I really see that a lot with mold toxins.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense as we try to have people take these harsher binders. We see that sometimes they have a reaction. And so when I learned of the work of the cell danger response, if you think of the biphospholipid layer of every cell, and if you don't have good fatty acids, and this is a simple example, but you might activate the cell danger response where the cells are just I'm going to go into almost a hibernation state to just protect you to survive another day. And so then your body cannot handle a lot of things coming in. It cannot handle the binder. It can't handle supplements. It can't handle many things. So I think that makes a lot of sense. And when I looked into this, so I'll always look into different rabbit holes, especially if my clients bring it up and if it's several of them. And I noticed it's always this wane and waxing with whatever is shared on social media. I don't know if you see it too, but there was a period where oxalates were really, really popular as an example. But so with the sulfur, it didn't make sense to me that it's one of the most abundant minerals we need. But if we are trying to reduce it and it does support with glutathione production and detox, why would our body produce excess of it if it's so bad for us? And so the logic of just removing sulfur, maybe it's a band-aid for some people, but it didn't seem like it was a root cause answer. And so the way you explained it makes a lot of sense.
Well, I think we have to think too, like, okay, is it really the sulfur pathway or is it dysbiosis with some of the sulfur producing bacteria and sulfur consuming bacteria? So yeah, our bodies are not simple. Yeah. That's one of the things that's so important, is it's not simple, but if we go through the right order of operations, then it's amazing what can happen for people.
No, I love it. What are your thoughts about the mast cell stabilizers, medications? Do you recommend a lot of people just, because I can imagine some people saying, okay, I'll do the limbic work, I'll do the nervous system support, but what about my symptoms today? Do you recommend them getting on some type of medication or support?
If people tolerate things, it can help them go a lot further faster. And so, and at one point I threw out the baby with the bathwater, and I myself was afraid of all medications. Okay. And then I realized, you know, there's different categories and classes. And a lot of people who are dealing with some pretty significant mast cell activation do really well with a synergy of medications. Of course, those need to be under supervision of their licensed medical provider. But there are really gentle entry-level medications that have a wonderful synergy with the mast cell supporting supplements. And I talk about some of the supplements over on our website. And with the medications, you know, we can think about even just the difference between first generation antihistamines, which would be like Benadryl. And then there's also a prescription called hydroxyzine. And then the second generation, which is like Claritin, Allegra, Zyrtec, Zizol. And so the second generations don't cross the blood-brain barrier. And they're just going to block histamine. They're going to block the histamine receptors just to kind of reduce some of the production. Sometimes that'll take a little load off. Now, Benadryl is highly anticholinergic. So that's why it can affect the brain more, but it's all dose dependent as well. And so sometimes people can do okay with a small amount of things. They can choose, for example, the hydroxyzine, which is an H1 that's sometimes used. It's an H1 antihistamine, sometimes used to help with sleep or anxiety, has way less effects on the brain than Benadryl, for example. Or if we look at, say, sometimes for the GI tract, something will be used like Pepcid, which is famotidine, then that can just block those H2 receptors. So there's not so much histamine being produced, but it's not blocking the acid production.
Okay.
Like a PPI. So like Prilosec, which is omeprazole, those are going to block the stomach acid production. Those have tons of downstream effects. So I think just being mindful. Then there's a lot of, you know, Singulair is really helpful for some people. It's montelukast. That medication's used for sometimes itching, sometimes asthma, but it's had some warnings in terms of effects for neurotransmitters. Now, I've had lots of people who took it and did great with it, and some people have trouble with it. And so these are kind of the categories. And then there's this whole biologics class, and those are really heavy hitters. Okay. So it's usually better if people start with some of the mast cell supporting supplements. And then if they need a little more support, a synergy with some of the entry level things. Now, that's all going to be case dependent. If you get somebody who's having anaphylaxis every day, they may need to really get that calmed down quickly, as opposed to somebody who's got mild symptoms.
And then how much do you also recommend the dietary changes?
So it's really important that people eat clean.
Okay.
If we're, again, eating processed foods, people have a hard time giving up their comfort foods, you know? Yes. Now, I've also had people who are down to two foods and that's all they could eat. So that's a whole nother category. It's a whole nother situation. And I don't want anybody to feel food shame at all. But the more clean we can eat, and then if there's histamine intolerance, to lower that. We do see oxalate issues more often with mold toxicity. And so sometimes people have to work with those oxalates. Salicylates are something else that can come up for people, but I don't want people to lower their salicylates unless they're really certain, because there's so many good antioxidants in those foods. Most importantly, though, I want people to realize that these aren't forever, that we want to be able to just lower the load and help calm the system down, and then to be able to introduce healthy foods again.
Right.
Now, I don't know that we want to go back to pizza and soda, but can we bring back a more variety of a diet as people improve?
Yeah. And especially if they want to, like, that's the whole thing. If you want to just eat meat, but you choose, that's fine. But if you ideally want to eat some veggies and have some bread occasionally, if you can tolerate it, let's say it's not gluten made, then you should have the ability to do so. And if you can't, then everything we're doing are more band-aids, right? If that makes sense. It's just reducing the bucket of the load, if we call it the MCAS symptoms, but it's just being able to reduce the burden on our system so that if we did want to have a birthday cake on our birthday, we can do so without then being bedridden because of that birthday cake, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe a healthy birthday cake.
Right. No. Agreed. Depending, I'm not endorsing sugar, but
yeah. I think of it as on the road to recovery of our health, we're going to have different things that we need as supports. And so if I, you know, going to your Band-Aid method, if I cut my finger pretty badly and I just said, I'm not going to do anything, then it's going to get all affected and gnarly. And so there are times to use a Band-Aid, or, you know, if I broke my leg, there's times to use crutches, because otherwise it's not going to heal well. So there are these things that are helpful for people. We have to just remember that we don't necessarily have to do them forever.
Yeah, I love that. I love that approach and saying it in that way. And it makes a lot of sense. And that's how I approach a elimination diet of just meats, is just to reduce any immune system activation. And then you could choose beyond that. Do you still want to do this, or do you want to consider introducing other things? And that's independent and it's individualized. So that makes sense. You mentioned DAO supplements a few times. A lot of the carnivore community is starting to use it because they've noticed it helps reduce the histamine or MCAS response. And so then they could maybe eat ground beef, or they could eat foods that have been refrigerated for a while, which all of those tend to produce more histamines over time. But we also then see people that are sensitive to it. So do you have any thoughts of why someone can be sensitive to even DAO supplements?
So DAO, if we're talking about, let's say, like Histamine Digest, or I have a formula called Histamine Digest 360, okay, and it has a little B6 in it, because B6 is a needed cofactor. And so those DAOs are derived from pork, and specifically pork kidney. Some people have sensitivity to pork.
Right.
There are, it's not as common, but there are some people that have been bitten by a Lone Star tick that end up with an antibody that gets passed to them, and they have a condition called alpha gal. Mm-hmm. And so that can make people sensitive to any mammalian products. So that's what I've seen. In people who are just extraordinarily sensitive, it's possible to have a sensitivity to anything. It's possible for the limbic system and kind of mast cell axis to target anything. And so that can happen sometimes. I tried a sprinkle of this or a capsule of this. I didn't feel well later. Oh, it must have been the DAO. Sometimes it could be something else. So my rule of thumb is typically if somebody tries something three times and they get the exact same reaction, okay, then it may be that. That's mostly what we see. Every once in a while, somebody's really, really sensitive to fillers. And there's all these different DAO products out there. The cleanest ones are using Avicel, which is the most hyperallergenic of the microcrystalline cellulose filler.
Okay. And it's so interesting that if you try the product and if it makes you sensitive, it can trigger the nervous system to then you know, protect you even more. So it's just this like very careful methodology you have to use. And it's just interesting.
This is why I've recommended for a lot of my sensitive clients to do some of their limbic work before they try something new.
Okay.
So they get themselves into a place of safety and then to try something. But for those who tolerate it, DAO can really be a game changer in helping with food tolerances. Yeah. And a lot of my clients will, even if they're too sensitive to have ground beef or leftovers, they'll use it every time they eat because just eating can produce histamine.
Right.
So sometimes that can allow them to just get a few more foods on board that are low histamine. They're struggling to add more foods.
Okay. Offline, we talked about how mold can affect our pancreas. And it's so interesting because our pancreas produces insulin that then helps our blood sugar levels. So can you share a little bit about that relationship?
So I do see sometimes people have trouble with hypoglycemia, which can be related to the pancreas, can also be related to the adrenals. But mold is just so disruptive. And there are molds that are toxic to the pancreas. And so when that happens, then we can also start having trouble with some of the pancreatic enzymes, the amylase, the lipase, the protease, that are used to break down our foods. So I know you know, Judy, but some people may not be aware that both pancreas and the small intestine are making digestive enzymes. And so that's one of the areas to look at that where people start to have pancreas issues is, are they getting exposed to mold? And we talked before about the nervous system quite a bit. The two big things that I see often being hurdles for people that are overlooked is nervous system dysregulation and then ongoing exposure to environmental mold. So cleaning up people's environment and their air, improving the air quality is super important.
The biggest struggle I see, and maybe the answer is nervous system support, but the struggle I see is a lot of our chronically ill clients, even if they realize their home is moldy, maybe one situationally, they can't just move out. But then if it's like some level of cleaning after some level of remediation, they're just exhausted and they can't do that. And then there's a struggle of, are my dark thoughts because of the mold or even a tick-borne illness, or is it because of my histamines and mast cell or the nervous system being dysregulated? And so then they struggle with, well, what do I focus on? Because I don't want these dark thoughts. And it's always such a ping-ponging thing that we have to work on. But what have you seen in your practice?
It's very common. And the housing market is quite tough.
Right
now. But one of the things that people have been able to do is to create a sanctuary room. And so they find the cleanest room in their house and then set up really good air purifiers, run those on high, and keep that room the best that they can and spend as much time in there as they can. And then sometimes that'll help people to start to shift things out. The other is, if people can afford it, is to take a little mold sabbatical and, if possible, go someplace drier. Sometimes people rent like an Airstream or something like that, and you got to watch all your electronics in there because it's metal and you don't want to have a lot of EMF exposure. Or sometimes people will just go camping, not make sure the tent's not moldy, camping somewhere at least where the environment is good. And sometimes that can help tease it out for people. And even if they can get to someplace that, if they're in someplace that's really moldy, can they just get to something that's better?
Oh, I love that. Why is it important to reduce histamines and not just symptom reduction? So let's say I can tolerate all the histamine medications, which I know that kind of doesn't make sense, but assuming that I can tolerate all the different types of histamine medications and I essentially band-aid whatever the root cause is by taking all these medications, why is it important to actually find the root cause?
If we're just doing, you know, symptom reduction, then particularly if there's mold that's colonizing somebody, growing in somebody, or we have this ongoing exposure and we're not cleaning it up and we're not detoxing it, then the symptoms can escalate. They can snowball over time. The same, unfortunately, with the tick-borne infections. But again, I find mold being one of the bigger missing pieces for people that if they would start on can make a huge difference for them. But you know, some people could Band-Aid if they have mild symptoms for the rest of their lives. That's usually not the people that we're working with. And so if they really want improvement, we have to address what is continually triggering the mast cell activation or the excess histamine release. If somebody just has histamine tolerance, it may be dysbiosis in the gut and cleaning the gut up. But I think you and I work with more complex cases than that.
Right. And what have you seen, just out of curiosity, benefit? Or so let's say someone's gone through some of the nervous system, whether it's structural or just a limbic system dysregulation that's been rewired. And then we've worked on the gut and we've worked on the home and making sure there's not an excess of mold or mycotoxins. What have you seen that people use to then support their mold illness?
Let me zoom out a little bit more and say, while people are addressing mold, it's really important to maintain some kind of nervous system support and mast cell support through that. So a lot of times what I see is people start addressing mold, they feel better, and then they'll cut all the rest of that out, and then they're going to be flaring. And so the approach that we typically take, now everything's individualized.
Sure.
So what we'll do is move through, okay, based on what we're seeing, which binders are more targeted towards these toxins. So for example, ochratoxin is bound up by charcoal, but a lot of times people also need to use something like a Welcol. So they may have to get a prescription for that. I know people who are a lot more robust can use cholestyramine, but it's a bit harsher. So in the sensitive population, people usually use Welcol. Before they even get there, though, people have to have a regular bowel movement. And that's one challenge is starting binders. If you're not having, if you're having constipation, it needs to be a daily bowel movement to move those toxins out, because you don't want the binders catching the toxins and then it all sitting there, because the binders don't bind really strongly. They bind kind of weakly and things can fall back off. And drink enough water. So these are really important. Some people feel really great at that point. And, you know, they can do 6 months to a year of binders and they just have mold toxicity. Other people may need a little extra liver supports. And then if people seem to have colonization, so this is where we're going to see chronic sinus issues or chronic GI tract. That's usually where the mold gets colonized in these kinds of situations. Then people may have to go on to like an antifungal protocol. And some people have cleared it up with herbals on its own. Some of those can be things like oregano oil, can be thyme. There's all kinds of things, monolaurin, andesolenic acid, lots of things like that. So again, I don't have any blanket protocols because we're all working with in this population with the people who fall through the cracks of the blanket protocols. But that's kind of the overall approach there. And then ochratoxin, for example, also it goes through the kidneys. So it goes through liver and kidneys. So sometimes people need a little extra kidney support for that as well.
Yeah, I feel like we also see some similar things. We notice that if people are just doing a mold protocol and there's no dietary interventions really discussed in it, they'll just start eating whatever they want. And then we notice that their gut starts getting more flared. So I think I agree with you. There's a lot of synergy that's needed to see what helps. And it is very individualized. We have a CIFO protocol, so fungal overgrowth in the small intestine. And it doesn't work for everyone because one, some people are so sensitive that they can't even take a little bit of berberine as an example, but that's such a common supplement that they'll use. So it's very individualized. And like you said, we work with people that the standard protocols don't work. And so I think what you said makes total sense. Do you think that people can end up down-regulating their MCAS where it's more normalized? Maybe they don't end up needing, you know, MCAS supports. Are there stories where people can finally almost fully heal from these symptomologies?
I have seen this when people really address the root causes and they've been able to get out of the mold exposure. Then I do see some people really improving. Other people may need some kind of maintenance support. So typically what we do is when people get to where the root causes are addressed, then they can go on a maintenance plan. And to get there, just start to take out one thing a week really slowly. The mistake can happen. People take everything out at one time. But then you can start to see if somebody starts to flare, oh, okay, we may need a little more support than what we have. But a lot of people are so happy if they can get back to just doing a little bit of mast cell support long-term, keeping their diet clean. I've seen other people who they can come off of their supplements and they do really well. Now, I don't know how long they'll do well for, you know, if it'd be 5 years, 10 years, forever. We see dramatic improvements though. So just to give people a story of hope, there's a lot of them, but I can just share. For example, I had a client that I was working with, and she was so incredibly sensitive. She was struggling to leave her home. She was having neurological issues. She couldn't take an Uber because of the fragrance issues. And she had quite a bit of mold toxicity and mast cell activation. She did a lot of nervous system work. She really worked with her mast cells, did the mold detox. And then she was really lucky and was able to do a few herbals that helped her with some of the tick-borne pieces. And things went into remission a couple of years later, and she ended up traveling, and she sent me an email and said, I'm out in New York. I'm on vacation with my daughter. I'm eating out in restaurants. I'm being mindful of what I'm ordering, but I've got my life back. I'm so happy about that. And she was riding in taxi cabs. Now she was asking to roll the windows down. And I think one of the things we want to remember is when we've had mast cell activation issues, we've had mold toxicity, it's easy to feel like we're a victim or to feel like, well, why is this happening to me? But it's really something that's happening throughout our world. It's just some of us are getting hit sooner, and then other people are getting hit with, you know, stage four cancers and degenerative disorders and so on. But the chronic illness has just skyrocketed. If we've got these mast cell issues, and we really have an opportunity to clean up our lifestyle now and have better quality of life long term, is the ideal. If we don't know and we're, you know, blissfully ignorant, and some people just ignore their bodies entirely and they're really not experiencing it because they're not here in their bodies, then we may find out when it's too late. So that's one of the ways I like to look at it, is how can we love ourselves and how can we be healthier in our lives, and then carry that through even as we recover.
I love that. Sometimes I tell my clients that the ones that are really sensitive to mold, that maybe they were when we lived in tribes and we didn't have testing and we didn't live in our own individual homes, that they were the ones that could alert the community, this place is probably not safe to go to. And so we all have roles and we can overcome certain obstacles we have, but it's just finding that root cause and not using Band-Aids forever. And like you said, there's times to use these Band-Aids, but it's figuring out where is the root cause and then getting towards that. And it's hard, but I mean, I think there's hope in like your story. I have a couple stories like that too, where they can now tolerate certain foods that they were never able to their whole lives because they would have some type of flushing on their face and stuff. And now they can eat that same dairy product and they're okay. And so there is hope, and these stories can be stories that other people can share. And it's just doing the work to figure out and working with someone and make sense. Where can people find you and all your knowledge? I think you have some type of program. If you maybe want to share a little bit about your program as well. And I didn't realize you had a supplement line, but if you have a supplement line, if you want to share that as well.
Thank you, Judy. Yeah. So our website's at mastcell360.com. So it's M as in Mary, AST as in Tom, CELL360. We have some courses on there. We have our top 8 mast cell supporting supplements course. We've got things that are really geared towards people who are sensitive up there. We've got a really comprehensive mold course there. And well, I don't have a full supplement line, but the Histamine Digest 360 is the DAO supplement.
Okay. And are you on social media?
Yes, we're on Facebook. So it's Mast Cell 360 on Facebook, and lots of resources on there, tons of resources that people can get started with.
Yeah, I always know that the people that have had their own journey are the ones that then become the advocates to share and then want to help people not have to go through the journey that you went through. So thank you so much for everything you do. We work with so many people, whether it's histamines or MCAS, and they always cite you. So just know that you're making a huge impact. And, you know, our very sensitive carnivore community is very appreciative. So thank you so much.
Thank you, Judy. And I'm really grateful for what you're doing as well. There's not a lot out there on how to do carnivore and then start to reintroduce food. So that's really important. And I'm so glad you're working with this population.
Well, thank you. Okay, guys, I hope you enjoyed this conversation. It is such an important conversation, especially if you are sensitive to aged meats, meat that stays in the refrigerator, and then you start feeling hives, sensitive to fish, sensitive to shellfish or canned foods, cured meats, ground beef that's a little old, or certain types of meats that you're just sensitive to. You may want to consider a lot of the things that Beth has talked about. I'd also love for you to just consider why you started a carnivore diet. If you started it to lose weight and to improve your metabolic syndrome, that's somewhat different than what we are talking about here. If you have no food sensitivities and you have no sensitivities in general, then maybe this is not the conversation for you. And where carnivore is such a great tool to heal your metabolism, get more insulin sensitive, and reduce your blood sugar imbalances. But for people that are sensitive, and that's why you came here, where standard care was not fixing your issues or your problems, focusing on carnivore and a diet is so important first. But if it's not healing all of your symptoms, then you may want to consider these other root cause issues that we talked about in this discussion. It is not ideal just to reduce your histamine levels. Yes, there's a temporary band-aid for that, but it's imperative to figure out, why do you even have histamines? Why do you even have MCAS being an issue? And sometimes it's mold, sometimes it's tick bites or chronic Lyme. And sometimes it's just that we've had so much trauma or childhood trauma that is causing us to have imbalances. And now our nervous system needs to be re-regulated. If we perceive the world in fear instead of perceiving it as an abundance of opportunities and options, then it will absolutely affect the way our cortisol is released and the way our endocrine system is functioning. I know it's a lot to think about, but my goal is always to get you to root cause healing. All right, guys, make sure to eat a lot of meat. Take care of your bodies, because it is the only place you have to live. I will talk to you later. Bye, guys. Thanks for listening to the Nutrition with Judy podcast. If you liked what you heard today, please make sure to leave a 5-star review on your favorite podcast app so more listeners like you can find the show. If you want more practitioner care and support, head over to nutritionwithjudy.com/groups so you can get more real talk about carnivore, the environment, and root cause healing. You can also find my content on Nutrition with Judy's YouTube, Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. Make sure to sign up for my weekly newsletter and learn more about in-depth articles with infographics at nutritionwithjudy.com/articles. You can find my 2 books, Carnivore Cure and The Complete Carnivore Diet for Beginners, on carnivorecure.com and amazon.com. At the heart of Nutrition with Judy's practice, our mission lies with a deep, unwavering passion for service and community. We will continue to empower you to have the knowledge and tools to live a life nearly symptom-free, because we firmly believe in healing and wellness for all.